Welcome to the Jazz Legends podcast. Alec Wilder and Harold Arlen are both composers in the great American songbook tradition. Chances are good you've never heard of Alec Wilder, even if you're familiar with some of his most popular tunes like I'll Be Around or While We're Young. Harold Arlen is perhaps best remembered for his score for The Wizard of Oz. Somewhere Over the Rainbow is one of the most recorded songs of all time. Irving Berlin once remarked of this great songwriter, "He wasn't as well known as some of us, but he was a better songwriter than most of us, and he will be missed by all of us." The knowledgeable jazz musicians you'll hear are Gunnar Biggs, Keith Bishop, Joey Carano, Leonard Thompson, and Bob Weller. And the talk is moderated by me, your host, Father Doran Stambaugh. Dig it.
So Wizard of Oz I've heard of.
Yeah. But he wrote the music for that. He wrote the music. His first song that was commercially popular was a song called Get Happy he wrote when he was still playing piano and touring around the country as a piano player and a singer. And he became kind of a songwriter in the great tradition of Tin Pan Alley songwriters. He would just start writing songs and they became popular writing for shows. And he moved to Hollywood and he wrote for a lot of movies. He wrote over 500 popular songs in his career.
Wow. Can I jump in and check on the Tin Pan Alley, which you just shared? For folks who don't know what it is, just
there was a building in New York called the Brill Building years ago, and I think it was down towards the Village. It was down in the 30s or whatever, and it was just basically offices for all these songwriters and song pluggers that have pianos in all these different rooms, and people would be cranking out songs and trying to sell them. And that was back in the days of piano rolls and also like piano sheet music, because that was the popular thing to have a piano in your house and learn to play like the latest popular songs. So There were a bunch of these offices in the Brill Building, and these guys would go in 9 to 5 and crank out songs and try and get them promoted. And it was a thing. And it lasted actually a really long time. Carole King was one of the last people that worked on Tin Pan Alley, which is, the 60s or whatever?
Yeah.
And music business had changed a lot by that time, but it was still in operation.
What was the tin pan?
Well, they did a lot of tuned pianos, sound tinny, and that was sort of like the connection. George Gershwin started out as a song plugger working on Tin Pan Alley, playing other people's songs, trying to sell them to publishers. I think he became a songwriter later, I heard, something like that.
I remember hearing that they actually brought the pianos out on the street. And I think it was in the 50s, if I remember correctly, like 56th or 58th Street or something like that. But they would all come out on the street with the pianos and sell songs on the street.
Really? Yeah. Oh, that was like the listening station?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Good work for piano tuners, too. All that moving around.
But that was sort of the tradition, that American popular song came out of that.
So Harold Arlen was Tin Pan Alley?
Well, no, he basically started out as a player and singer, singing other people's material, and gradually started playing his own. It's kind of a dichotomy that I have, both Alec Wilder and Arlen on the same program. But partly it's because their birthdays were one day apart, and I thought, there are not that many tunes that Alec Wilder is known for, because he was also a classical composer. He wrote a lot of chamber music for his friends. It was really an interesting character. He also wrote a really great book called American Popular Song, where he analyzes like a dozen great popular songwriters.
What makes him, as the layperson, I don't associate either of them with jazz. So the association with jazz is that these were the early show tunes that the jazzers would after hours take and play and write contrafacts to and all that stuff. Are they writing jazz tunes as such?
No.
Not per se. But jazz musicians have loved Harold Arlen's music for years, but partially because it's interesting harmonically.
I was going to say the harmonic structure is attractive.
And they were influenced by jazz.
I think they definitely were. Yes, Alec Wilder definitely was, because he had a lot of friends that were jazz musicians, and he would hang out with them and write things for them to play. A lot of the chamber music he wrote was written for like people that he was associated with that were basically jazz players that played whatever instrument they played, he would write for them.
Did you know he wrote the lyrics on A Child Is Born?
Yeah, that's interesting. Because most of his own tunes, he didn't write the lyrics for.
So the early jazz musicians are playing the pop tunes and turning them into jazz tunes. which is interesting to me if I think about like today. Is that a thing that can or could be done, or like could you?
It's funny.
Is Taylor Swift, are her tunes? We're not just talking about style, right? We're talking about composition.
The Beatles example for sure, even though that's not Tin Pan Alley, I think of those guys, of course, as far as, you know, material that's in the song. There's a lot going on in those songs. Those aren't like, you know, one chord things that go on forever. But yeah, I guess there's always a few things even today that are more interesting than others, you know.
Well, I noticed I teach a piano class over at Palomar College, and one of the things we do is we reharmonize tunes. And I've noticed that some tunes are, you can reharmonize them and you can add extensions and other things, and it works really well because the tunes are structured in a way that the extensions are okay. In fact, a lot of times they're part of the melody.
Yeah.
But yeah. On a lot of newer stuff, that's just basically major triads, you can't do anything with it. You can't add anything. It just doesn't work.
Right.
But a lot of the old tunes and a lot of Beatles tunes, you can do a lot with them.
Oh, yeah. Hmm.
You know?
Well, sometimes like the vocal range in some of the modern stuff is like a major third. You know, it's like, it's almost the hip hop influence has become so strong in those things. We did a gig with Kenny Garrett at a jazz camp I was teaching at. And he brought his band in for the feature concert. And they were talking to him afterwards. He says, "Where did you find these guys?" And these guys are, you know, slackers. He says, "Oh, I go to the hip hop clubs. That's where I find all my rhythm sections now. It's all based off of hip hop, and then I give them my tune and see what they do with it."
Well, and then sometimes, okay. And I hear what you're saying, Bob, because yes, sometimes it just doesn't feel natural to turn a song into some piece of art. You know, when we've heard it a certain way, and I have had this experience also where jazz musicians will sometimes reharmonize a popular song, and it changes the song entirely. And whatever we liked about it now is gone. Because sometimes you think, well, why don't you just write your own song? Because you just changed it entirely. The melody's sort of still there. And that's just a possible criticism of this sort of stuff.
You guys remember Don Sebesky?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
He did a jazz arrangement of The Rite of Spring.
I have that record.
Totally inappropriate. I mean, it just doesn't work at all, I don't think. So it's kind of the same thing. Like a lot of tunes that we look at in my class, some of them work really well, and some don't work at all.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not exactly sure what it is, but I would say the simpler the harmonic idiom, then the more difficult it's going to be to make anything out of it.
Well, it's interesting to me, again, as a layperson, that the popular music of 100 years ago, the changes were more musically, I don't know, interesting? Is this an objective statement? I feel like it is to some degree.
Oh, true. I think it's true.
And the popular tunes today aren't as much. And so the thing that appealed to the populace has changed. I'm not sure what creates that change.
It might have a little something to do with the pianos no longer being in every house, and so folks are not learning to play the piano, and maybe not learning about harmony, at least. That might be at play. Alec Wilder, in one of those interviews, was talking about Harold Arlen, who he thought was wonderful. And he said that he was a good arranger also, and that wasn't always the case, as you mentioned earlier, with some of the songwriters. He could arrange, and I would imagine he just taught himself to do that.
I wouldn't be surprised, because musicians in general had a lot more skills back then than they do these days, because they had to. That stuff, to get their music played, they had to have some kind of skill to be able to write out the parts. And
Quincy Jones has a great quote. He says, "You know, before Pro Tools, we had pro musicians."
No, it's really true.
Yeah. We haven't talked a lot about Alec Wilder and Harold Arlen, but they've given us a really interesting conversation. You said at the start, Keith, that it's a dichotomy putting them together or for a set playing their tunes.
Partially because Alec Wilder was a schooled composer. He actually took classes at Eastman. I don't think he ever got a degree at Eastman.
He didn't even pay tuition.
Yeah, well, that was ideal way to go to a music school, because you certainly don't get your money out of it. Most of the Tin Pan Alley composers and popular songwriters weren't that schooled. They hadn't gone to any place and studied composition formally. They just like heard the stuff and wrote it down. And so that's sort of one of the differences. I don't think that Harold Arlen wrote any chamber music. Actually, Frank Sinatra liked Alec Wilder's music so much that to get a record made of his chamber music, he had a whole series of octets that he recorded on LP that supposedly Sinatra conducted, so they could market it as Sinatra Conducts, yeah. Alec Wilder. And it was out on Capitol Records, you know, commercial record label, and Wilder wouldn't have gotten that otherwise.
I never knew that Sinatra was a conductor. I don't
think he was.
Yeah. I saw the picture. He's holding a baton and everything, and he's sweaty, and his hair's messed up. Well, and also, I saw that Alec Wilder was good friends with Peggy Lee, and that was kind of nice. Apparently, he wrote her a song or more than one song, and they would often speak. And there was another woman that maybe Marion McPartland and he were good friends.
Oh, and Marion made a whole record of his tunes at one point,
which seems like fun, you know. And also, I heard he never owned a home.
Well, he was definitely itinerant, shall we say. Yeah. Yeah, he kept a suitcase at the Algonquin Hotel. So that was sort of his like landing pad sometimes if he didn't have any place to stay. But he stayed with a lot of friends over the years. And I guess wore out his welcome and then stay with another friend.
Yeah. It is kind of cool that these guys, Alec Wilder and Harold Arlen, happened to be paired on this little thing that we're doing, because as we were talking about, you know, before we started recording, like Wilder had a tremendous, you know, respect for Arlen, even as much as, like we were saying, as much as Gershwin and some of those other heavy guys. And I think it's really neat that you know, as we're saying, like Wilder was this heavy classical composer, and then here he is towards the end of his life writing a huge volume that's basically saying, hey, these guys, you know, these Tin Pan Alley guys, they're heavy. Like, look at what they've done. They're not like elite classical music, like a lot of the stuff that I write. He wouldn't have said that about himself, but he's really like trying to sort of bring that art form into the public view and realize, you know, how much is involved in just quote unquote writing songs, you know. I think that's really a neat thing, kind of almost an act of, I mean, he seemed like a pretty modest guy, and it's kind of cool that he had a real respect for this other art form that he was sort of living next to and in a lot of ways all of his life, you know.
I feel like I should put a plug in for another book that he wrote called Letters I Never Mailed, which demonstrates his unique sense of humor.
This is Alec Wilder.
Alec Wilder wrote a book called Letters I Never Mailed, and they were never intended to be mailed. He wrote it after the fact about people that he really liked or really disliked to get it off his chest, and they're really funny and entertaining. And it's worth picking up, even if you don't know anything about Alec Wilder, just to enjoy his sense of humor.
That's great. That's like that email that you write and don't send. And
yeah.
Wait. Yeah, yeah. But he published.
Send. Hopefully.
Yeah. Hopefully don't send. So Over the Rainbow was voted the 20th century's number one song by the RIAA and the NEA.
Yeah. The other thing that you said I thought was really interesting was about Ira Gershwin's contribution. Well,
yeah, Ira Gershwin. I think it might have had something to do with them not liking the tune because it seemed incomplete to them for some reason. But when Arlen was working on the thing, Kip Harburg was the lyricist, and he was hung up on it. So he calls Ira Gershwin. He goes, I'm writing this tune and I can't finish it. So he did and so Ira went, how about if little bluebirds fly in the sky, why oh why can't I? And he did it over the phone, I think. And he went, wait a minute, say that again. Okay. And that was the last three lines of Over the Rainbow. And Ira Gershwin actually gave them to Kip and got no credit whatsoever for it. And the tune made it into the movie.
Well, it's probably the one tune that everyone has heard that Harold Arlen wrote that they identify with Harold Arlen.
Yeah.
The number one song, if you think about the 20th century and popular music in the 20th century, that's just an extraordinary accomplishment.
Judy Garland was 12 or 13 years old when she sang that. Amazing. Can you imagine singing at that age? I mean, she was another giant, obviously, not a composer, but...
And she became one of Harold Arlen's biggest supporters
over the
course of her career.
This is super in the weeds, and I don't know if I just happened to be listening to the same version of this song in the past few days and not realizing it, but I thought I heard more than once, like, you know, of Over the Rainbow, you know, the beginning of every phrase is this ascending octave, somewhere. And I thought I heard more than once that when a female singer would sing the last A section, she didn't do the octave. She just sang a unison, just somewhere. Are you guys, does that ring a bell with you guys? Or did I just listen to a weird version? And I wondered if that was in the original.
That's the jazz version.
Yeah. I mean, and it's not like they didn't have the range because they just did it for two other A sections. So I wonder,
I'm sorry. Now I'm reminded of that bad joke, which I have to tell now.
Yeah, please do.
You know, the jazz musician is down on his luck in Paris. And he's just really, like, depressed, and he's standing out on the balcony of his little pension, and he starts playing ba-da-da-da-da-da-da. And he plays the A section a couple times, and the crowd starts to gather. And he suddenly, he can't remember how the bridge goes. And he gets, like, so depressed, he throws himself off the balcony, and somebody calls the ambulance, and it's coming ba-da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah. That's a cold joke.
Sorry.
The Evensong Quintet will play a sampling of songs by Alec Wilder and Harold Arlen, such as Get Happy, Come Rain or Come Shine, My Shining Hour, and many others, on March 10th, starting at 4 p.m. The weekly jazz evensong gatherings are free and open to the public and take place Sundays at 4 p.m. at St. Michael's by the Sea in Carlsbad, California. See you there.